This episode is brought to you by Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a new podcast, Scene on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey everyone, it is fall, which means it's National Novel Writing Month season, aka NaNoWriMo. And if you don't know about NaNoWriMo, it is a challenge to write 50,000 words of your story in the month of November. That's 30 days. And we believe that a goal and a deadline is a creative midwife. And here are two things to think about in order to encourage you to sign up for NaNoWriMo. One, it's kind of like a writing boot camp. It trains you to be the writer by having you show up every day to write and to reach for a goal. But then it's also a rollicking writing community. We have 1,000 volunteers around the world who organize in-person writing events, and we're basically everywhere on the internet. It's a galvanizing force to feel that the whole world is writing with you, and it's free. So all you have to do is go to NaNoWriMo.org and sign up. It's like signing up for any social media profile. And then get ready to write on November 1st. I'll see you there. Hello, scribes, scribblers, wordslingers, cave painters, tail spinners, and fan fiction writers. I'm Grant Faulkner, an employee of this little organization and this little event known as National Novel Writing Month. And I'm with my wordsmithy and wordslinging co-host, Brooke Warner. And Brooke, I get very excited this time of year because I like to think of the literally thousands of people who are conjuring novels to write this November. And that very image is the equivalent of magic to me because I think of them dreaming up so many stories. It's like a magic wand is being waved over the planet, or rather, I guess, about 400,000 individual magic wands.
That is a beautiful image, Grant. I totally agree. And the experience is like magic, which you have to experience to feel.
Yeah, agreed. And this is just random, but a friend of mine sent me a clip of Brené Brown, who is a well-known researcher of shame and is a noted TED talker and author. And in the clip, Brown talks about how we are meaning-making creatures, and our primary way to make meaning is through the stories we tell ourselves. And she said that not only do the stories we tell define us, but the stories we don't tell define us. And I was very interested in that. And I think that's really important to keep in mind because people are so often fearful or intimidated from telling their story and believing in their story. And that's why our mantra at NaNoWriMo is your story matters. And I think finding a community to tell your story is important, and finding the form for your story is also important. And that's why we're focusing on fan fiction today, because fanfic tends to be part of a community of other fans, and the form of an existing story world is a type of invitation to enter that story world and ask your own what if of it. And I've wanted to explore this form for a long time because, you know, many writers write fan fiction in NaNoWriMo. And our guest today is Rainbow Rowell, who wrote the best-selling Fangirl in NaNoWriMo, which takes place in part in a fan fiction world and is about a character who is a prominent fanfic writer on the internet, but just a regular anxious teen in the real world. I also wanted to explore fan fiction because it's sometimes disparaged or condescended to, and I happen to think that fan fiction is core to storytelling, you know, a great way to express yourself, find your voice, find your story. And it's even a type of kind of a course for learning how to write, and it's just fun. But before we dive in, for listeners who might not be acquainted with fan fiction, I thought we should start with a definition of it. And the meaning of fan fiction is stories involving popular fictional characters that are written by fans and often posted on the internet. So, for example, you might write alternative stories for Harry Potter or Jane Austen novel or Star Trek or the TV show Friends. You know, it just speaks to the way a story might be told by a single author to start, but how storytelling is a shared experience, so a story can grow as it goes from reader to reader or writer to writer.
Exactly. And it's interesting because fanfic is reminiscent really of the beginnings of storytelling, like before anyone owned the copyright on characters, when people told stories around a campfire. And in the olden days, stories evolved as they were passed around and retold. And the oldest stories we know of, like Homer's Odyssey, were written by collaborations, right? I mean, many people handing that story down and retold and varied retellings. It's just an interesting way to think about the way stories were told before the Gutenberg press revolutionized publishing. And Grant, you might also say that Shakespeare made a career out of fan fiction. After all, wealthy patrons would request a new stab at a familiar story, and he would comply, or he would draw upon historical facts and people to make fiction from history.
Good point. Shakespeare's plays like Romeo and Juliet, or Othello, or The Winter's Tale were all based on relatively recent fiction by other authors. And before copyright, you know, definitely, like as you say, it wasn't odd for authors to copy characters, if not entire plots. And I'm thinking of there was another author who wrote a whole sequel to Cervantes' Don Quixote before Cervantes finished and published his own second volume, you know, and that would be scandalous today, especially if it was published and sold. But in some ways, you know, we're all telling a story through the lens of other stories. And perhaps the most obvious case of this is 50 Shades of Grey, which was originally a work of Twilight fan fiction. And then when 50 Shades became a hit, its popularity made publishers pay attention and seek out other popular works of fan fiction. But I want to, you know, not focus so much on the commercial side of fan fiction, because I think the pure storytelling side of it is so much more interesting to me. And by that, I mean, you know, there are thousands of people gathering online to write just for writing's sake. They're taking joy in their imaginations and sharing stories and connecting with others and forming communities online. And I think of this as the, you know, the purest form of storytelling and its biggest purpose, to come together through the stories we tell. But that said, you know, fanfic, it's a form of writing that has been often maligned, and actually the online fandom, you know, it's a world largely made up of young women, and young women tend not to get too much respect in our culture, as we all well know. So people come to the concept of fan fiction sometimes with a lot of cynicism and disdain or snobbishness, but I love the risk taking that's kind of embedded in it, and the freedom of fan fiction, and fan writers really don't have any rules. You know, they aren't locked into a traditional structure, partly because they're not publishing, and I like that romance is so much a part of the stories, and especially queer romances.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read that fan fiction comprises 1/3 of all content about books on the web, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. Your point is well taken about it being dominated by young women. I mean, it makes sense, because I think that's a space, you know, women often tend to seek community in a way that I think can tend to be a little bit more proactive than men. I mean, that's obviously very anecdotal, but it's certainly been my experience. And it's a comparatively healthy outlet when you think about it. And then as far as fan fiction marginalizing some writers, I mean, I think that's always been true. I think what's so exciting about fan fiction, as you're saying, you know, is like people come to it for a true love of it, and then they find their people, right? Which is mm-hmm. the story that we heard from Helen McDonald and Sin Blaché recently when we had them on the show. They're finding friends, they're finding community. And I also think it's kind of an amazing truth that the internet has become a different type of campfire in some ways.
Yeah, that's a great image, the internet as the modern campfire for stories, because there is a return to the storytelling of old with fanfic. It's a type of storytelling that happens, you know, it happens almost in real time in some ways, and with a live audience in mind that gives feedbacks and reacts. It's like fanfic has helped us return to a time when the audience and the storyteller, you know, had a symbiotic relationship. And what's great is that the fan also becomes the storyteller, not just the consumer or the reader. And what that means is that stories go to so many different and perhaps unexpected places. For example, fanfic writers tend to explore how their favorite characters would fare in an alternate universe, or writers have the freedom to explore relationships. And I should note that fanfiction is also a haven for identities that have been marginalized or ignored in media, especially LGBTQ+ voices. And in fact, queer relationships are some of the most common pairings, and writers can take couples that have been, you know, teased but never quite, you know, the relationships haven't quite been addressed, such as Sherlock and John from the show Sherlock. And then they can actually give them fleshed out relationships that fill the void. It's also been an important tool throughout the years for fans to take characters and or plots that they are already familiar with to create new stories. And it's not like a great way to practice writing and editing using elements that you're already familiar with, but a way to share your love of fandom with other fans. So many fans use sites such as Archive of Our Own, which is known as AO3, fanfiction.net, LiveJournal, and Tumblr. And each has this, you know, totally wide variety of voices and communities you can find yourself in.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the sites you mentioned are a common ground for all types of writers, from beginners to professionals, much like NaNoWriMo, actually. And I think they're great because by focusing on pre-established stories and stories that people already love and know, writers can develop their plot, character dialogue skills without the pressures of coming up with something wholly new. And this is good training ground. I mean, I think I love it that, you know, there are beginners who are training and then there are much more seasoned people who are doing it just for the love of trying something different. And then writers also can be anonymous on these sites, which encourages people to grow and share their work without having to go through a publisher, which is just all good things.
Yeah, it's true. There is a lot of crossover between fanfic sites and NaNoWriMo, as you mentioned. And I think that's because of just a love of playfulness and storytelling and telling stories for the pure joy of it, you know, without commercial designs. And, you know, there is something for everyone in the world of fanfiction in the end, if you want to enter it. And as I mentioned, you can break rules and you can try a new writing style. And as you mentioned, you know, you can do that anonymously. And when reading, you can set filters to specifically search for particular character, relationship, genre, you know, stuff like that, and decide, you know, the length of what you want or the topics that you want to read about within your fandom. And I think, you know, crossovers are also another great way to, you know, bring your favorite fan worlds together. There's a lot of kind of intertextuality going on. So if there is a story or fandom that you want to see, then you have the chance to create it.
Well, it's also only natural that our guest today, Rainbow Rowell, wrote her book Fangirl during NaNoWriMo, and she's celebrating the novel's 10th anniversary. So let's hear more about her take on fan fiction and NaNoWriMo after this short break.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm super excited to welcome Rainbow Rowell to Right Minded. Rainbow writes all kinds of stuff. Sometimes she writes about adults, as she did in Attachments and Landline. Sometimes she writes about teenagers, as she did in Eleanor Park and Fangirl, which she wrote a draft of in NaNoWriMo. And sometimes she writes about lovesick vampires and guys with dragon wings, as she did in the Simon Snow trilogy. Recently, she's been writing short stories. Her first collection, Scattered Showers, is out now, and she also writes the monthly She-Hulk comic for Marvel. Rainbow now lives in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome, Rainbow.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is super exciting. One, it's NaNoWriMo number 25, but it's also the 10th anniversary of Fangirl, which, as I mentioned, you wrote during NaNoWriMo. So we're celebrating that as well, because it's such a NaNoWriMo novel in so many ways, I think. And so I want to go back in time to just before that NaNoWriMo. And I'm going to go back in time by reading from a pep talk that you wrote for us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I think, I love that pep talk. So I'm just going to guide everybody to go check it out. It's on the NaNoWriMo site. And so this is the beginning of it. I was very skeptical about NaNoWriMo at first, as was I, Rainbow, by the way. It seemed like something that amateur writers would do, or young writers, people who needed to be tricked into finishing their books. I'd already written two books by October 2011 and sold them to publishers, and I couldn't imagine writing either of them or anything good in a month. That's not writing, I thought. That's just piling up words. But then I thought about how wonderful it would be to have a pile of 50,000 words. And so Rainbow, I mentioned I was also skeptical about NaNoWriMo when I first heard about it, and for similar reasons. But I also was won over. I don't really like rough drafting. I love revising. Mm-hmm. And so I love that I can kind of rush through a rough draft and get it over with. And so I was wondering if you could speak to your experience during that NaNoWriMo and how it influenced you as a writer.
Well, I'm with you. I also don't like the rough draft. I found the first time through very harrowing. I often feel like I can feel every word that I haven't written hanging around my neck. I'm just desperate to get them off of me. Not like I have something that I need to say, but like the weight of what I haven't done yet feels so heavy. Well, my first book, Attachments, took years to write. I had never written a novel before, and I was really wandering in the wilderness. I just had no idea. I didn't have any idea how to do it or any confidence that I could do it, other than what you get from having been a reader. So you sort of have a sense of how to write a book from having read so many books. So I knew I didn't want to repeat that. I wanted to be a little bit more focused. And then Eleanor and Park, looking back, I actually wrote Eleanor and Park in a very NaNoWriMo way. I just didn't realize it. But I think my third novel felt like a make or break moment for me, in that I couldn't keep I had young kids. I had a job. I felt that I couldn't keep taking that much time away for what felt like just a very time-hungry hobby. Attachments had come out. Eleanor and Park had not come out yet. So I had this feeling of, wouldn't it be wonderful to, in a month, know whether I had something worth working on? And you asked about my experience. I mean, I remember I took I think like a week, I used up all my vacation days. I hoarded my vacation days. And then I think I took a few days off without pay. I clumped it around the holidays. I'm pretty sure I worked like right up until the Thanksgiving meal and then right after that month. Mm-hmm. And I just really went at it. Every day, I think I tried to write 2,000 words and did not always. I mean, I probably rarely got there, honestly. But yeah, I just kept going at it. The thing that I did differently from my previous novels is I always would read what I had before I would start. And with Attachments, I wrote that again over years. It might be months between times that I sat down. So I would have to sit down and read the whole novel just to get back into the flow of it. Eleanor and Park wasn't quite so drawn out, but I would always, with Eleanor and Park, read whatever I'd written for the past two sessions of writing. So with Fangirl, I felt like I didn't have the time to do that. And so I would not let myself edit. So instead of sitting down and editing whatever I'd written the day before or the week before, I would just go right back into it. And the nice thing about NaNoWriMo, and this was the real revelation for me, this was the thing I learned, is that if you don't take that much time away, you don't need to take as much time to wade back in. I was spending so much time of my writing, my very precious writing time away from my kids. I was spending so much of that time just reviewing my work and trying to remember what I had done. And so that month was so special because I realized, oh, if I just stay in it, I mean, honestly, it's twice as much time. I would be writing often, you know, in 3 or 4 hours after work. It's precious to be able to write for that whole time and not spend half of that time reviewing. So that was where that was the big revelation for me, that if I could write for at least 2 hours a day and not take more than 2 days off, I was going to stay. And that's still my rule. You know, if that, when I'm writing, I don't want to wait out of it, because once I wait out of it, I'm going to have to take a lot of time waiting back in.
Wow. I you're saying all this stuff and I'm like, yes, that I just, it resonates with me so much. I'm that total person who just goes through and is like rereads what I read mm-hmm. or what I wrote last time. So insightful. Well, Rainbow, we're dedicating this episode to exploring fan fiction, and Fangirl is so interesting because your main character, Kath, is having a hard time managing her life and her transition to college. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she has thousands of online readers who know her as Magic Kath, mm-hmm. a prolific author of fan fiction that remixes the hugely popular Simon Snow novels, which bear a tongue-in-cheek resemblance to the Harry Potter series. So mm-hmm. just to kind of set the tone. So what drew you to Kath and writing about fan fiction by writing a novel about it?
I had not grown up with the internet because I'm old. And so internet fandom, when I was in my teen fandom years, you know, I didn't have that. And I really discovered internet fandom as an adult. And I think I was so struck by not just how into it I was, especially fan fiction, but I kept thinking about what, you know, if I were one of the young people writing, what would that have been like? How would that have changed my life? I was totally the sort of person. I mean, I was writing fan fiction, but it was like in a notebook and not for anybody else to read. What would it have been like to have had access to that community and to have and to have had feedback on my writing at that age, fiction writing? And I didn't really get the confidence to write fiction until my 30s. What would it have been like to be writing fiction and having an audience and having fans and having a community, you know, in high school? So it was me really thinking about this like alternate universe. What would it be like for someone like me to have that world?
Rainbow, a reviewer for Tor.com, wrote that Rowell understands something vital in her novel, and that is that fandom is so much more than escapism. It is, whether conscious or unconsciously, a way for folks to interact with their surroundings. And for Kath, being a fan, you know, it is her life, and her fandom of the Simon Snow series, you know, gets her and her sister through their mother leaving. And that's in large part because of the fanfic community that they were a part of. And Kath especially, you know, finds her voice through this community. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of crossover between fanfiction and NaNoWriMo, and a very similar community is the foundation of NaNoWriMo. So I was wondering if you could speak to the role of community, or fanfic in particular, in helping people find and develop their voices, and has community played a role in shaping you as a writer?
Much like Kath, I am hermit and an introvert in that way. I'm what they call a lurker. I'm someone who can be a part of a fandom for years and no one will ever know. I leave no trace. And so it was interesting to write Kath, someone who has so many, so much social anxiety and so much fear and shyness, writing for a pretty big audience and interacting with that audience. Mm-hmm. So she has kind of an unusual relationship with the community because her relationship is with her sister, her greatest collaborator and her number one audience. She's writing everything for her sister first. And then she has, I don't want to say stressful, but she has this community of, she's so young and yet she has thousands and thousands of people hanging on her, her updates. And then, you know, the way that fandom treats its writers isn't the same. You know, like people can get demanding, they can get critical. They want it to end a certain way. I guess that's true for published writers as well. She's turned into something she didn't plan to become. She never planned to be a big name fan or a big star in this universe. And so she really heavily feels the weight of those readers, I think, and what they're expecting. So I think like Kath, I don't come easily to community. Mm. You know, the way that I make friends is by working with them usually. I'm not a good hang, I don't think. Sorry, guys.
Well, you're hanging with us right now.
I'm doing okay. I've got like 15 minutes of hang in me as a human being. So I think the way that I've always made friends and even, you know, how my husband is just by, working side by side with people. So I think for Kath, the community and the way that she develops the voice is by accidentally ending up with an audience. And an audience is an interesting animal. Mm-hmm. And she's always thinking, what do I want from these characters? What does the audience want from these characters? What do people expect from me? What do I owe them? So I think she has kind of she has definitely a slightly different relationship with the community than someone who is maybe making really close friends. I have like one friend I've made in fandom, and my fandom friend has dozens of friends in fandom, right? Like she has all of this rich tapestry. And the way that I work is I find the one person, you know, and that's my person.
I want to continue on this vein of Kath and the fact that, you know, this is a book that's now 10 years old, and just the whole idea of it seems quite prescient now, you know, of just how far we've come along with the internet age, all the things that you're saying about being an influencer, mm-hmm. also how social anxiety impacts these kids who, you know, are getting famous so young, which we hear about a lot. And it does feel to me that the internet has evolved in so many negative ways. Mm. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that and whether you would render the story differently today. I mean, I'm guessing it would be inevitable, you know, but right. Curious about your impressions on the ways the internet have changed and how that might have impacted Kath and her portrayal.
That's an interesting question. One thing is that fan fiction is so different. So when I was pitching this book, there was a real feeling to the people I was pitching it to. You can't write about fan fiction. Like it's this dirty secret. Nobody wants to admit that they do it. The publishing world, you know, someone very close to me said, you know, publisher's not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole because they see fan fiction as a threat and definitely as like an unsavory thing to do. That's totally changed. That's completely changed now. I think people are so open about their ships, about their fan fiction. I feel that people have very little, embarrassment or shame. So that's radically different. The sort of when Kath, you know, meets the fellow fan fiction reader in the library in the book, and it's like they're members of a secret society. I mean, that's gone. Mm-hmm. I suppose I'm nostalgic about, not about the shame, but about the smallness of the internet and the feeling that you could kind of know something. I think it's difficult to feel that you know something now, that you can, those, you know, LiveJournal or the places where people were talking about fandom before, you could feel like you got a sense of the room and who was in the room and what the room was like. I don't feel that way anymore. And I also feel like I can't always tell if it's a real person talking to me. So that's a difference. Like before, you might not know who was talking to you, but you felt like it was a real person. So I suppose I feel very nostalgic about the internet that's in the book.
Yeah, it keeps changing. And it's interesting how you call it a smaller world, because it did feel more intimate and small. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, in terms of like fan fiction's kind of standing in the world, yeah, it's come a long way and it is much more mainstream and it's sought after by publishers and all that. But one of Kath's challenges, which I think still exists in the world, is that she has this fiction writing professor who thinks fan fiction is, you know, basically the end of the civilized world, and gives her an F for submitting a fanfic story for a class assignment because she considers it to be plagiarism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I came up through writing workshops and MFA programs, and I definitely experienced that kind of snobbishness towards fan fiction or genre fiction in general, even. So I'm curious if you could speak to I guess that it's fan fiction's role in this larger sphere of publishing and academia, and why it's largely is it largely misunderstood? Where would you place it, and where do you place your own interest in it?
No, I guess I don't know how it's fitting in academia now. I mean, I imagine it's like publishing, where, you know, the younger people working in publishing probably read fan fiction and may have written fan fiction and understand it. So there's not quite this fear or that feeling that it's unsavory. But I think that a fiction writing professor would still probably tell Kath she can't write fan fiction in a fiction class. I think I would probably tell Kath she can't write fan fiction in a fiction writing class, because I think the struggle for Kath is, I mean, fan fiction is different. It's different. You know, I feel like, for me, it's a little bit more like what I do for Marvel, you know, where I'm playing with something that's already set up in a way. So I think for Kath, there's this struggle to step outside of herself a little bit and step outside of the world she knows so well, step outside of the world of Simon Snow, which was created by someone else, characters created by someone else, and also step outside of a built-in audience. And I think that can be really difficult if you are a fan fiction writer who also would maybe like to write original fiction. When you write fan fiction, you have a built-in audience in a way. It's other fans of those characters. And they're going to be kind to you because they're grateful, and also because they want more. Like, I'm not very judgmental of the people who write my favorite characters, my favorite ships. I'm just grateful. And I think for Kath, the idea of writing her original fiction feels very scary, because the thing that you don't have to do in fan fiction is make someone care about your main character. Mm-hmm. And if you've written original fiction, you know that's like the hardest thing you do when you write something, is get the reader to care. And so and I don't want to say training wheels, because I don't want to oversimplify fan fiction and make it sound like I think fan fiction is easy or not valuable. But there is this feeling of, oh my gosh, can I make someone care about a character that they've never seen before, they've never met before?
Really interesting thoughts there. I don't do fan fiction, so I just find it really fascinating. And Kath's fan fiction itself is part of the novel. So I was wondering, was it a challenge to distinguish between writing your story and writing the fan fiction parts of Fangirl? And did you enjoy one more than the other? Or was it just about kind of separating the two voices a little bit?
Well, I was worried at first, because if you read Fangirl, you get Kath's fan fiction. You also get some you get some pieces of the original book, which doesn't exist. The Simon Snow books doesn't exist in our world. And then you get not just fan fiction, one fan fiction from Kath, but you get various pieces and stories written across her life, sometimes with her sister. And each of those stories is set in a slightly different world. So each one has a slightly different universe that it's in. And I was worried, that seems like a lot. Like, even as I'm explaining it to you, I think there's no way you're going to that seems really, really confusing. But what I had in my head was, as someone who reads a lot of fan fiction, I don't get confused. So I don't get, when I start a new fan fiction, it doesn't confuse me, you know, if it's, it's the Star Wars characters, but it's set in the modern day, or it's set in 1960s, or this time they're in a coffee shop, or this time they're spies, or this time they're in the Star Wars universe, but one thing is different. I'm never confused, ever. And so, not ever, but rarely. So I thought I should just trust the reader. Like, I have proof all around me that people can handle complicated stories. I'm just going to trust that this will not be that confusing, and that the reader will follow me. And what I found was it's a very confusing book to explain, and it is not a confusing book to read. So I think when you're reading, you just get what's happening and you're fine. But yeah, I was intimidated by, I was intimidated by the structure, and that I'd never written fantasy before. So I was very intimidated because the fan fiction is fantasy, and I've only written at that point contemporary realistic fiction. So I was very nervous about that. And it really, I look back on it now, and I think that was me experimenting with fantasy. It gave me a very safe place, because if those sections of the book weren't good, I could just go, well, I'm not a fantasy writer.
Well, Rainbow, in closing, I'm going to return back to your pep talk.
Well, Grant, before you do a really good closing, I have something I want to say about NaNoWriMo.
Oh, good. Okay.
Can I say it? Is that okay? I'll take us off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is that I think the most valuable thing about NaNoWriMo is if you are a working person, especially, or if not even if you're a working person, if you have a lot going on all the time, it's so difficult to give yourself permission to write. Mm-hmm. And the most valuable thing I thought about that first month was to have that 1 month carved out. And also to be able to say to my husband or say to everyone else in my life, it's just this month. Mm-hmm. Like, just give me this month. And I think the myth that you think when you hear about NaNoWriMo is, oh, you have to be able to write a novel in a month. And that's just not what happens. What happens is you get a big chunk of something, and it's so rare. And you might go years without ever giving yourself enough time to write a novel. And you're always going to wait until you have time. You're never going to have time. So by just saying you're going to do it, you have given yourself this one discrete chunk, and it's just so much easier to deal with 1 month than to parcel that month out over a year or 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. I oftentimes say something very similar, that, you know, creativity falls lower and lower on our to-do lists as we get older. Mm. And to put it at the top of the list, it is just 1 month, you know, mm-hmm. 1 month of the year. And it is, I like the way you use the word permission, because I think we have to give ourselves permission sometimes for that inner need, right? For that very valuable inner need. Mm-hmm. And well, thank you for saying that again. And I'm going to recommend that listeners read your pep talk for more.
Thank you.
But reading from it, I think this comes towards the end of the pep talk. You say, here's something that really shocked me during my revisions. I kept almost every word I wrote during NaNoWriMo. That 50,000 word pile I made wasn't a mess at all. It's some of the bravest writing I've ever done, and it includes my all-time favorite character, a guy I think I would have second-guessed to death under normal circumstances. NaNoWriMo helped me push past so many of my doubts and insecurities and bad habits, and I think that's partly why I love Fangirl so much. Now, because I remember how swept away I was, or I felt when I was writing it. And I think that is one of these interesting ironies of NaNoWriMo, is that quantity can produce quality, or it is a creative experiment with process that you kind of have to experience, I guess.
Well, and what you're doing too is you're setting yourself free, because you don't have time to second guess and question yourself. And so you're doing kind of brave things without, you know, oh, I'll just worry about that later. Oh, can I pull this off? I'll just worry about it. You know, you asked about writing the fan fiction. Can I pull that off? Oh, I don't know. I'll figure it out later. Yeah. And also maybe some more interesting writing, because you stay in that creative part of your brain for more of the time. You're not going to the rational part all the time. So the writing I did, I think, was more interesting in ways and surprising.
I like that as a creative mantra. I can worry about it later. Give yourself permission now. Well, thank you so much. It is a brave book, and you're a brave writer, and I really appreciate you joining us, Rainbow.
Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Rainbow.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this short break with today's book trend.
This week's book trend is surprise fan fiction. And it's interesting because there's always been a tension between fan fiction and publishing, you know, in large part because fan fiction is spawned by other writers' characters and story frameworks. But as we discussed, fan fiction has been a part of storytelling and literature since the beginning of time as well. Also, as publishers are realizing more and more, fanfic sites can be a great place to find talented writers. And Vulture recently reported a story about, about fanfiction in general, but they focused on Ollie Hazelwood, a New York Times bestselling author of the romance novels The Love Hypothesis, Love on the Brain, and Love Theoretically. And Ollie found her literary agent in January 2020 in an unusual way. You know, most authors go through this long process of sending out bunches of query letters seeking representation, agent, but an agent actually found Ollie by reaching out to her after reading her stories that she'd posted on Archive of Our Own, a popular fanfic site. And her story is focused on a relationship between the Star Wars duo of Kylo Ren and Rey Skywalker, a pairing, you know, that's often abbreviated to Reylo in fanfic communities. And once Hazelwood posted that she was considering reworking her stories to publish them, an agent from the Sandra Dykstra literary agency sent a message encouraging her to submit, and they've worked together since.
Yeah, it's very cool, and there's precedent for that. We talked about it earlier with E.L. James and 50 Shades of Grey, but it looks like top publishing houses, including Hachette, HarperCollins, Penguin Random House, are making an even more concerted effort to find stories in this space. And marketing materials have even been embracing fanfic-style tropes. Like enemies to lovers, only one bed, fake dating, and fated mates, all of which match tagging systems found on Archive of Our Own. The appeal, of course, is understandable. Fanfic writers bring knowledge of how to market a story and build an audience. They're adept at building an author platform where they already have one. And on the writing side, they've developed the writing chops already by writing so much on these fanfic sites. Although there's obviously a learning curve, you know, if you're wanting to write an entire book, because you have to figure out the plot and the emotional beat for the longer story arc.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Brooke, if as a publisher, whether you have any concerns about essentially, you know, repackaging an existing story. And I say this because of the current controversies with AI-generated works where a computer is picking out narrative patterns and putting together stories. And fanfic has an element of that. You know, it's more about picking out patterns and adding new strands to them, though. And it's fundamentally human and creative and expansive. It just finds its origin in another's, you know, IP-based elements sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, some fanfic writers rewrite their fics before publishing them. That's a process known as filing off the serial numbers, which involves more than simply changing the names. I personally haven't had to think about this because we haven't published fanfic work at She Writes or Spark Press to date. We instead do a lot of historical fiction, which does reimagine real people and their real life stories. And we have certainly published speculative fiction. Certain fanfic stories would probably need to have legal vetting, you know, to make sure that you're not infringing on the copyrights. A lot of fanfic writers, I mean, like Rainbow, writes for Marvel. And so then they have free reign because then you're not worrying about the copyrights at all. And then some copyrights, of course, have gone into the public domain. And I guess it's just, you know, looking around and seeing, like, what's the difference between these online sites, right, where you can be very free to do as you please. And then when you get into the publishing world, it just obviously there's different considerations, but the publishers are the ones who have to, you know, carry that on their shoulders more so than the writers themselves, I think.
Yeah. Well, those issues notwithstanding, the fan fiction to romance pipeline continues to grow. As Vulture reported, you know, earlier this year, the Reylo fandom helped propel books from their favorite fanfic writers to the top of the Barnes & Noble bestseller list during the store's annual pre-order sale, even with minimal advertising from the editorial houses. Jen Prokop, a romance critic and co-host of the romance podcast Fated Mates, said that Hazelwood is a model for fanfiction authors looking to publish original works. And she makes the point that the love hypothesis is clearly Reylo fanfiction to people who know, but to others like me, it's just a fun romance featuring two scientists. So I should also note that, of course, Hollywood is going with the trend. Last October, Beasts Pictures, which produced Netflix's Persuasion adaptation, announced it would be bringing the love hypothesis to screens, and fans immediately took to social media to express their hopes that Star Wars co-stars Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley would play the movie's lead. So it would come full circle from fiction to fan fiction and back to its origins. So I guess a story is constantly evolving, and that's really the bigger trend.
That's right. Stories evolve, creativity evolves, and publishing evolves. And we will be here to try to keep up with all of that and understand these evolutions. We are here week in and week out, and we are very grateful to all of you for being loyal listeners. We hope that these October episodes are giving you some good food for thought if you're thinking about jumping into NaNoWriMo. And of course, we hope you will. So we will see you next week with another new episode and your weekly dose of right-minded inspiration.